Love, Lust, and Laughter with Dr. Diana Wiley and Billy Sage, Fridays at 6 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Aloha, and welcome once again to Wiley and Sage Love, Lust, and Laughter on PRN. I am faithful sidekick in the middle of a severe electric storm in Honolulu, where lightning has been coming down about once every 3 or 4 seconds. Power, I got knocked out a few times, but I'll try to struggle through as best I can with your scintillating host, Dr. Diana Wiley, and our guest today, Michael Jonas. You might remember him from back in February. Michael's here to talk about time for two, but I'm here too in time to say that I'm time for three, if there's three of us, not two of us. So let's make it a menage, a conversational threesome.
is this all about two-timing?
Well, it's about two-timing thrice or once. Once, remember, as George W. said, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me three times, twice, poo-poo. Maybe that was something else.
Hey, lucky me, I've got two funny guys on this show today, and that's wonderful. Yes, Michael Jonas was our guest just before Valentine's Day, and I happened to be in Hawaii at the time with my significant other, and so we had our conversation on the 11th of February. So people who are interested in hearing part one with Michael Jonas can go back to that show since it's archived.
Because I've known two is not just about romance. It is romance. Wow.
That's right. That's right. It's a wonderful website, Time for Two, T-W-O, and you'll find lots of good information there. I met Michael and his wife, Barbara, probably 25 years ago. Isn't that about right?
Yeah, which is really amazing because I'm only 26 years old.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right. The first time he came on, he said, oh, ow, 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 ow. Oh, quit acting like a big baby, Michael.
No, it has to do with, looking in the mirror and not always recognizing the person standing there shaving.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
yeah. But you and Barbara, well, actually, Barbara created the first game in your mix.
She started us 30 years ago on this road of romance and relationships and intimacy and play and couples having fun together. And yes, as you may remember, she made a kiss and make up game for us after a disagreement.
And you were going off on a trip, a business
trip. I was going off on a trip, and I was coming home New Year's Eve afternoon. And we typically don't go out New Year's Eve, and Barbara was glad I was out of the house, and I was glad I was leaving. It was one of those wonderful little marital spats, and I came home to find a note on the front door that said, put on something comfortable and meet me in the living room at 7 o'clock. And I came in, Barbara said hello, I said hello, and I did what she suggested. I took a shower and put on comfortable clothes and showed up at 7, and she had transformed the living room with candles and flowers and music, and she had put out things to nibble on and things to drink and said, I have this little game. Would you like to play it? And she had put together cardboard and cutouts, and unfortunately, neither of us are great drawers, so the illustrations were rudimentary, but I said, sure, what's the worst that can happen? And it was fantastic. It was just fantastic. And that became a game called An Enchanting Evening, and that's about 500,000 copies ago.
So that's your best-selling game.
That got us started. That launched it, and then it was the reaction from people that played An Enchanting Evening that encouraged us to develop more games and then ultimately to write a book, not so much a how-to manual because we're not therapists. And so our take on this is how do you have fun together? And just it's that part of the equation. It's not the serious problem-solving part.
It's such a good book, and we'll talk some about the book. We're going to talk some about the games. And you had recently, you and Barbara wrote an article for Grand Magazine, Too Old for Sex is the question mark. of course, probably not. And we're never too old for romance. And you, in this article, you've got some very important things like play together. And I thought we would start with the sort of the playfulness aspect of our romance and our sexuality, and how much better the relationship is when we bring some humor and some play into it.
Well, you know, life has become complex. We are bombarded with lots of images and lots of information, and unfortunately a good deal of it is negative. And we need to find space for each other that's fun. I mean, it's a break from the intensity of the connectivity we have. I mean, everybody needs, you know, this whole explosion of communication and social networking. We still need space for our relationship. And one of the things to do in that private place is to play and to laugh and to be forever young at whatever young age is comfortable.
And we know for a fact that couples who laugh together last together.
Yes.
I mean, they really do. And, you know, the original, and to be silly together. And the word silly did not originally mean ridiculous or trivial. It comes from the old English salig, which originally meant blessed, prosperous, happy, and healthy. And so silliness is really a way to feel all four things if you really get into it. And I happen to know that Billy Sage is pretty good at being silly.
That's right. I talk about our new sponsor. We found this from a radio broadcast back when the Druids captured it 6,000 years ago. Brought to you by Tiger Nuts, the medicated anger shampoo for people crazy enough to eat stripes. And now this.
I was just plain silly. Yeah, but the gods don't know that.
You know, the
250,000 people ran to the store to look for tiger stripes.
Yeah. Tiger nuts. It's Tiger Nuts, the medicated anger shampoo for people crazy enough to eat stripes.
Oh, eat stripes.
Right.
I see.
Okay. Those people. Regular and new Belgian shampoo. Yes. And, of course, it was recommended by the Mudwongs, the craziest group out of Belgian Mongolia. We're not
Mongolia.
Silly. They're not.
Well, of course, laughing together and playing together can be very healing. Our bodies produce more, when we're laughing, more dopamine, more oxytocin, and pushes out the cortisol and the adrenaline. I think it's interesting that the Zuni Indian culture, in that culture, clowns are considered healers, right along with medicine men and women. So if you come down with an illness, no matter what, you can choose to be treated by a clown.
Well, we have a close friend, Barbara and I, a couple that we've known for many years, Carl and Elaine Hammerschlag. And Carl is a internationally sought-after speaker.
Mm-hmm.
He's a psychiatrist, and he speaks really on integrative healing and spent years working on Native American reservations, starting in Arizona but elsewhere, and he works very closely with a good friend of his whose name may be familiar to Patch Adams.
Oh, yeah.
And they do all kinds of stuff with clowns and healing.
It's Native American reservations, may I help you? Yes, may we have the Navajo party of 6 million?
Exactly.
Do you have a reservation? Yes, we have several. Thank you.
So he works. So he works with Patch Adams, and yes, I think a lot of us are familiar with that story, because
one of his takes is exactly what you're talking about. That, you know, the role that humor plays in healing. I remember Norman Cousins, the publisher of Saturday Review.
Oh right.
Yeah.
When he became quite ill, he spent a number of long periods of time watching movies like Abbott and Costello and The Three Stooges, what we, you know, people would call silly or trivial movies, that he found entertaining, and again, laughter being this phenomenal medication. So I think it's, you know, it's good for individuals in terms of physical health, but I think it's also good for relationship health.
It is, and Norman Cousins wrote a book about that called Anatomy of an Illness.
Uh-huh.
And he found that for the number of hours that he spent laughing, he was pain-free for the same number of hours. So this laughing business is really like internal jogging, and it's so good for us. So back to your article from Grand Magazine, you also say, besides play together, you say keep dating each other, and this is really important. Would you talk more about that?
Sure. One of the things we were asked was, some suggestions for easy things to do to keep a relationship fresh. Two of them are breaking the routine and doing things, either new things together or doing things that you've shared together differently. And one of those is dating. And the idea behind the dating, and especially one of the things that we love, and Barbara and I still do this, is mystery dates, where one of us will take responsibility for planning an evening, and all you really tell your partner is what time to be ready and what kind of clothing is appropriate. And you get to do the planning. You get to introduce the activity, the adventure that you want. They, your partner, gets to appreciate the anticipation and a little bit of the mystery. And so this whole notion of this dating and continuing to date adds some, it adds flavor, it adds a difference in activity, it gives each of you a chance to explore preferences, and it's just fun. It's just, and one of the things that other couples have shared with us, too, is with this notion of dating is dressing in separate rooms. So you go back to it, just like dating.
Right.
And I know that it's popular today with people that are dating to, you know, kind of hang out together. It's less structured. When Barbara and I were younger and we were first dating, it was more patterned, and it was more, you kind of knew what a date was and where you were going to go and when you were going to be home. And that all those social structures have changed, but the notion of still setting aside special time for a date, I think in our heavily scheduled lives with all these demands, it's another way to carve out space and time for your relationship.
I do lots and lots of marriage counseling, and inevitably I suggest, as part of the homework, that they take turns, just as you and Barbara do, take turns planning the date night. And I am going to add to it the mystery date, although I have said don't tell, you know, make it a surprise, because surprise is romantic. And but it's very, very important for couples to slow down, to focus in on each other. And I think sometimes even pretending that you're different people, and maybe you meet in a bar, and you make up a story about yourself, and then you have the option of going home together. I know one couple that played this out. He even brought along a condom. Just to make it that much more real.
He was promptly arrested by her father.
Right. Well, we have a story in our book, in the book of Love, Laughter, and Romance, about role-playing and how... With the example this one couple shared with us that we then shared with our readers is the meeting in a cocktail lounge in a hotel downtown at the end of a work day. And I don't remember now which of the partners, but one of them had made arrangements with the hotel and had not told the other partner, and seduced the partner, seduced his partner. I don't remember what
his
or her partner.
Wasn't there a movie with Vince Vaughn that same premise? I think it was a movie where it was a couple and they were trying to avoid spending Christmas with their in-laws, both sides of the family they're embarrassed by or some such thing. But it starts off with them in a singles bar just insulting the hell out of each other. And you, how could this couple, and then it turns out they're married and it was just a role they were playing.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, Another version.
Yeah, well, this included a number of the elements that you're talking about. It included the role-playing. It included the fantasy. It included finding private space for your relationship. You know, there's nothing wrong with getting away for an evening or two at a local hotel. In fact, one of the things that we recommend and one of the things you can do at Time for Two is find hotels and inns and B&Bs that offer special romance packages. And in today's market, it's a wonderful opportunity for couples to escape from the dishes and even the kids, because the hotels are offering all kinds of programs as inducements to, you know, develop hotel patron business.
It's and then for the couple to play an enchanting evening when they get to that romantic destination. Not only have they spent time talking to each other, focusing in on each other, perhaps kissing, because you have a lot of cards in your romantic games that that get couples to kiss each other in one way or another. Don't you have a card about matinee kiss? I mean, you've got a whole bunch.
Oh, yeah. What happens with an enchanting evening is what we did with the game was, rather than make it very direct and specific, we made it much more indirect, and we'd like to think it's more subtle and ambiguous. So there's a lot of communication that's very positive and upbeat, things you find attractive about each other, things you reminisce about, things you look forward to sharing, your favorite foods, your favorite music, your favorite place to travel, your favorite fantasy location. But then the cards that in the game that invite something physical are either very light and playful. The card you were referring to, God, your memory's fabulous. The Saturday matinee at the Bijou Theater, or Saturday afternoon at the Bijou Theater, give your partner a matinee kiss.
And that's lots of fun. I once lectured on Great Sex Over 40 in Las Vegas, and there were about 40 in the group. And it happened to include a couple that I'd seen some years before. And they were very generous with me. They said I helped save their marriage and so on. But I had some of the questions, and I had a copy of the Enchanting Evening game there. And that was precisely the card that we pulled for them. And they, up in front of everybody else, he threw her back, gave her a really good matinee kiss, and it was really fun. Everybody loved it. So you're, but, you know, it's interesting. 3 out of 4 women think kissing is more intimate than having sex. So kissing for many women is not foreplay. It's the best sexual play. And this is according to an internet survey of 100,000 kissers.
Oh.
Yeah. And
was it good for you, too? Rinse, please.
Now, in terms of kissing techniques, let's just talk a little bit about this. This was another survey done, and it found that it's really good in terms of techniques to start off easy, kiss lightly around her mouth, on her cheeks, or on her neck. That's a very sensual thing to do. And then when you reach her mouth, kiss her very softly on the lips. No insert tongue here, kisses. And go slowly. Going very slowly is sure to entice her. So I think that if a man kisses his partner often, not as just a prelude to sex, but just being affectionate, it telegraphs his commitment to her.
Mm-hmm.
And
besides feeling good, it's very reassuring.
Yeah.
But, of course, every time you say that, Diane, I can't help but think of Madeleine Kahn and Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein.
Uh-uh.
No tongue.
Oh, yeah. I don't quite remember that.
Oh, Gene Wilder plays her fiancé, and come kiss me, my darling. Oh, uh-uh, no tongue. Stay back at the wedding.
Yeah. Most women, not all women, kind of like soft kisses in the beginning until they're more aroused. So making your lips really soft can work. Your matinee kiss was a little more than soft kissing, because it implied that you would be a little more passionate in it.
Yes, more theatrical.
More theatrical. There is a better word. So, now you and Barbara had another recent article published in the Home. What is it? The Home magazine.
On eHow.com. We we were interviewed for an article on romancing the home.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and it was a lot of fun to talk about, because there's so many there's so many things you can do to romance your environment. Everything from just simply more candlelight and less electric light to repainting and redecorating. You can run the whole gamut of expenditure and commitment. But it was fun to explore some of these everyday things that you can do, just simply to create, again, space that's that's inviting romance and inviting intimacy, and just feels good to be in.
And if things are picked up and it's a clean home, that helps too. And the bedroom needs to have the television out and other electrical, unless you're going to watch erotic films together, but mostly television. In fact, you say in this article, we have been told, I'm quoting you, we have been told by people we've met that the number one way to rekindle a romance is to turn off the television.
When we started to put together the book of Love, Laughter, and Romance, which really came from the people who responded to us from our romance games, and we went back to these people in very large numbers, and we said, what else do you do besides play our games? What else do you do that you call romance? And a couple of things came out of this that were kind of eye-opening. One, with the range of experiences that people call romantic, and not necessarily things you would commonly associate with romance. The second was looking for those kind of flashpoints, and that's where this television, first time we heard that notion was turn off the damn television set. That TV, unless you're watching erotic films together, TV is a distraction. It doesn't bring you together. It distracts you. It's a singular experience. Mm-hmm. And it was just interesting to hear how strongly held that opinion is.
I was recently quoted in an international men's magazine, and they quoted me on that too. And also to turn off your BlackBerry, to turn off all technology, because you want to focus in on each other, and you don't want your brain to be distracted. The best sex, really, is where you're focused, where you're playful, where you're mindful, and so that you can let go and surrender and be very much in the moment. And you can't do that if you've got all this technology distracting you.
A suggestion.
Yes.
Clitter, don't Twitter.
Clitter, don't Twitter. Good.
Thank you. Next.
How do you feel about putting your cell phone on vibrate?
Well, you just set the phone on stun and then put your wife on vibrate.
Did you know, just as an aside here, did you know that the clitoris has 8,000 nerve fibers and the penis only has 4,000? And the only...
if you act now and combine them, you have 12,000. Counting 12,000, acting in concert. So turn off that TV and turn on the clitter.
Right, and for a limited time, we'll throw in...
Yes, the towel, completely. I surrender. You've got more nerve endings. Teach me.
See, we're having some fun, and that's really, really essential. I read on Tantra.com, which is about tantric sexuality, that playfulness can, if you're playful, help you be more experimental and perhaps help the woman reach orgasms more than once. And what she says is, I'm sure that the most inspiring out of this world sex you've ever had was a result of good technique, great set and setting. So we're back to music, lighting, location, vibes, that sort of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Playfulness, a lengthy period of time, but most importantly, a lover who was fully present with you. And this combination of factors, they don't just happen naturally. It takes practice and consciousness. Now, there was a famous anthropologist named Desmond Morris, and he wrote this: a group of 27 couples were asked to vary their sexual positions experimentally, employing postures that would allow greater stimulation of the two vaginal hotspots. He doesn't break that down, but I'm thinking he means the clitoris and the G-spot. And it was found that 3/4 of the females involved were then able to achieve regular vaginal orgasms. And so if a woman is having an orgasm with intercourse, and not a lot of women are able to do that, it's usually as a result of the G-spot being stimulated, the man lasting a while, and perhaps the clitoris being stimulated, so it's more like a blended orgasm.
Yeah, I
so.
Think if you can give up some of the self-consciousness that some people experience and kind of explore what's pleasurable, it's amazing how broad the landscape becomes and how many things you can turn into things that are really sex. You can make things that may not necessarily, In the everyday sense, sound sexual, they can become sexual.
Yes, and that's perhaps a good segue into what I hope we'll be talking about after the break. And because in your home article, Barbara is quoted as saying, food and fantasy, eating to escape. So Barbara's quote is, Barbara Jonas, your wife, obviously, I'm just telling the audience, food plays a strong role in romance and intimacy, said Barbara Jonas. Scent is powerful, especially when certain cooking aromas bring back romantic memories. So after the break, we'll talk about that. But I also would like for us to talk about, I guess this is from your book, Love, Laughter, and Romance, 7 Steps to a Perfect Night of Passion. And you have day one, you're in love with your partner, let them know it, as a little teaser for the audience to stay with us. You want to talk about that, Brian?
Yes, and I will be...
I mean,
I will be. I will be ready to. Let's. I'd be glad to do that. To go talk a little bit about some things that you can do to kind of roadmap where you want to go to with intimacy.
And if you'd like to do that, you might want to call in. We have a toll-free studio line. You got some questions? Boy, have we got answers at 1-888-874-4888. Once again, toll-free 1-888-874-4888.
So we'll be back, and we're going to talk about the 7 steps to a perfect night of passion, and also food and fantasy and eating to escape. Let's talk about that, too. Yum, yum.
There.
Listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Join us, Bruce and Marianne Curtis, Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network for Truth and Freedom. We present provocative conversations with the world's most brilliant minds in the areas of holistic health, spiritual wisdom, politics, and a host of other topics. Some of our topics include the latest work in non-invasive therapy on the brain, the truth beneath the global economic meltdown, healing power of the breath, and the sublime truth beyond all religious traditions. In this age of transformation, we need to look beneath the surface appearance of things to see the underlying reality. For material that is always illuminating and often liberating, tune in to Truth and Freedom on the Progressive Radio Network Fridays at 3 p.m.
Your favorite show on Progressive Radio Network? Go to progressiveradionetwork.com anytime, day or night, for all of our great shows. Don't be left out and miss important shows and information. Visit progressiveradionetwork.com and be in the loop.
Hey, Lee.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No, don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
Shut it off. I said not to play it.
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny.
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the Mama Grizzly won't tear off your limbs.
Cheater in the Rude, Thursdays, 8 p.m., Progressive Radio Network.
Is someone driving you crazy? Do you have a cheating boyfriend or girlfriend? An ex you can't let go of? An obnoxious boss? Adult kids who won't listen? I'm Hollis Polk, and I fix relationship problems. Your life, your relationship with Hollis Polk offers you practical solutions for all sorts of people problems. Listen and call in Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, or download the podcast at progressiveradionetwork.com.
To the number one internet radio station for progressive minds, Progressive Radio Network.
And we're back with Wiley and Sage, Love, Lust, and Laughter on the Progressive Radio Network. Our guest today, Michael Jonas. And if you want to see something really interesting and enlightening, go to his website, timefortwo.com. That's TimeForTwo.com. And now it's time for three. You, me, Dr. Diana Wiley, and Michael Jonas. Wait, that's four. Okay, so menage a English major who can't count.
No, that's three. We're three.
Wait.
Yeah.
I said you, me. I was speaking you to the audience.
Oh, of course. Well, the audience.
Are you an English major? I are a English major.
All right, so we're having a good time, and that's wonderful. Seven steps to a perfect night of passion, and you have such good suggestions here.
What we did with this was we were asked more often than probably we would like to have been. We were asked, okay, your games sound really great, Enchanting Evening or Romantic Sensations or Fan the Flames. How do I get my partner to play? And so Seven Steps to a Perfect Night of Passion is a kind of roadmap for seducing your partner.
Step one, and, rinse, please.
I'm sorry?
Step one, rinse, please.
Okay. I don't know how much detail you want me to go through, but these are 7 days. So on the first day, you're in love with your partner, let him or her know it. Post-it note, email, voicemail, telegram, balloons, it doesn't make any difference. And it can be as simple or as complicated as you feel like doing it, but it's simply expressing your feelings for your partner and letting him or her know how attractive they are to you and how much you appreciate their being in your life. Step one.
And if I may just add this before you go to step two, so many relationships die from under-emotional nourishment. We just, they, people that have been together a long time simply start taking each other for granted. And so you've got to say the words and tell them. You know, I do a little exercise with some of my couples where they sit on my couch and they face each other, and it's called Sweet Nothings. And then they say positive, really nice things to each other back and forth.
Okay. When on day one you communicate your feeling and affection, you might also want to add, I have something planned for down the road in the next couple of days, or on the coming Saturday night, or whenever it's going to be appropriate for you to actually seduce your partner, so that you begin to build anticipation.
Exactly.
Second day, mm-hmm. Give him or her a simple gift. Something, it can be some music, it can be a small book of poems, it can be flowers, it can be candy, it can be a bottle of wine. It doesn't make any difference. It's the idea that you're communicating to your partner that you're thinking about him or her and that they're special to you. And again, remind your partner of this date you have planned without talking about in any way what the date is going to actually involve. The third is give your partner the gift of time. This is a wonderful gift that everybody can afford. You give your partner a guilt-free day where whatever would ordinarily be their everyday tasks, chores, errands, whatever, you do them, and they can veg out, they can go shopping, they can go play tennis, they can go stare at the ceiling or watch the grass grow, but they can do it without having to feel guilty that somehow they're not discharging their relationship responsibility.
The newest porn for women shows hunky-looking men not wearing a shirt, vacuuming the living room floor. Really?
Oh, no.
There is such a book.
That's not hard to imagine.
Yeah.
Not at all.
And
Day four. Enjoy the great outdoors together. And it can be everything from getting away to a national park, if one is in your environment area, to just get up early in the morning and take a walk together if the weather is conducive. That's also a great way to break the routine, is to get up early in the morning before work or before the kids have to, before the day kind of settles in on top of you, and go out for breakfast or take a small picnic breakfast with you to a nearby park. But again, being outside. So that's the fourth day. The fifth day is doing some simple changes around the house to make the house more attractive and more romantic. And the emphasis here is on simple changes. So it isn't paint a room. It isn't re-carpet. It's put some candles in the bedroom, get the newspapers or magazines that are collected in the corner out of there. Maybe it's buy a new bedspread comforter. These are simple steps, but they're ways to communicate to your partner that you're thinking about him or her, you're thinking about the relationship, and it's a way of really, I think, expressing how you value that relationship. Day six, enjoy an evening together, not without being physically intimate. So watch a movie together, listen to music together, maybe drag out photo albums, and there are some people that still actually have photo albums. Not everything is on a handheld, and reminisce a little bit, but it's the idea of spending some quiet time and kind of anticipatory time, because you know that the next evening is more likely to, or the next time that you have planned for together is going to be more intimate and potentially more sexual.
So you're actually building some sexual energy, which is always a good thing, and you can also dance together.
Wonderful.
And I think you can play an enchanting evening, or is that your next step?
That's the last.
That's the last step. Oh yes, because tell the advantages of that. Yes.
Well, step seven is, and one of the ways to make this happen, if you are not sure that your partner is going to be in the mood, is take responsibility for making the evening happen. So tell your partner where to be and what time to be there, what
what's appropriate for clothing, but you take care of all the things that you're going to want to eat, to drink. You take care of putting out if it's candlelight or whatever is appropriate for your relationship, whatever you know your partner enjoys and finds appealing and seductive, incorporate that. And then invite them to play a game. And our suggestion with these romance games, with our games, is to make the invitation not a challenge, but an enticement. And that's step seven, the evening where these games are clearly intended to culminate in a romantic, intimate experience. They don't necessarily have to, but the games certainly are appropriate if that's where you're going to go with the evening. And that's a seven-step seduction. And it can take, it doesn't take 7 days. It can take much longer. You can really string out this anticipation and think of it really as extended foreplay.
And I think for couples that have been married a long time, this can really add some spice to their sex life and their romantic life. Let's put it in reverse, to their romantic life and then their sex life.
Well, and it's a way of getting out of the routine. And that, I think that's very important. Barbara and I have heard from couples of all kinds of relationships, in different lengths of relationships, that breaking the routine, doing things differently, it's more, I think, from what we have been told and from our own personal experience, it's much more important, I think, than people tend to think. And how, boredom and routine can just absolutely crush romance and intimacy.
It sure can. And I have, over the years, I have played an enchanting evening different times with different partners or husbands or whatever. And I've always had fun, and my guy has always had fun, too. And it's gotten us talking about different things. I think I told you, Michael, I have the original enchanting evening.
Oh, the peacock design?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. So,
as Bobby Darin once said during a nightclub performance, you're going back further than I care to remember.
Now, you mentioned in playing these games that you might even have on hand, if your partner likes it, food. And I'm thinking this is a good segue into talking about food, because sometimes juicy, succulent finger foods are nice, because then you can serve your lover and he or she can serve you. And that can be very, very wonderful. You know, if you think about it, the bond between food and sensual pleasure, it's really the first thing we learn at birth. From nursing to death, you know, food and sex go hand in hand.
Doo-duh.
Yeah.
Literally.
Oh,
no.
He says, that tastes grand. Speaking of which, if you're going to enjoy some sensual food today with wonderful things like Google and YouTube, do you remember the classic 1965 movie Tom Jones with
Albert? Oh, yes.
Of course. The eating scene in Tom Jones. If food could come.
it is truly an iconic segment of the movie. It's just amazing it's really out of control. They're two eating this meal and stuffing food in their faces.
Here is a suggestion. Using computers, instead of having to go to a copper plate engraver, you can take a nice piece of cream stock card and have an engraved invitation and just describe what you're going to do to each other.
Hmm.
Followed by mutual ejaculation and in perfect Gordian script and handed to her on a silver tray at the White Glove. There you are, madam. You'll feel for this evening and just sort of using all correct anatomical terms and just, you know, the sheer formality of it, and then just descend into a very polite British orgy.
Yeah, it's perfect. I mean, just, it's for sure. Food and love are about sharing and exploring.
Yeah.
I think the only
limitation that I can think of when it comes to food and intimacy is to not eat a lot and
oh,
feel
yeah, keep
stuck
it light
and uncomfortable.
Yep.
So
then the blood, instead of going to the genitals, goes to digesting.
Right.
And it's not so good.
Yeah, the wrong things get distended.
Belches are not that erotic.
They aren't, and the wrong things get distended.
Ah.
Yes, that's right, to the belly. Now, Father's Day is coming up in a couple of weeks, or I think it's the 19th. And so I have this question that I'll put out there. I'm wondering how we women who love our men, the fathers of our children, can cook an aphrodisiac meal to reward our guy after the children are tucked away if we've got young kids.
All you have to do is take two hot dog buns and himself. He'll be cooking plenty.
It seems to me you would start with what does he really like.
There's an idea.
What are some of the indulgent foods? What are your special occasion foods? You know, and what would be taking that plus what would be physically appropriate for a romantic evening after the kids have gone to bed?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've eliminated things like barbecued steak and standing rib roast, but that doesn't mean you can't put out shrimp cocktail or oysters on the half shell.
Or pickles.
Hey, listen, maybe it's popcorn. It doesn't make any difference as long as you are showing him that you care because you are presenting something you know he enjoys and finds satisfying. So I think it's hard. You know, it's hard to be formulaic and say, okay, this is a romantic or this is an aphrodisiac meal, because it really depends on, you know, his likes and dislikes and your culinary capabilities.
Yes, and let's change it up, and then there would be times when the man can cook for her.
Oh, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I think that, and because things that come from the heart mean a lot of times more than what might come from the wallet. So if the guy has printed out recipes and he's taken time to go to the store, and a lot of guys don't like to look up instructions, so even that little gesture is quite adorable if he's cooking for her. I've told my son, and he took my advice because he did learn to cook, that cooking for a woman can be a real turn on for the woman.
I love to cook, and I love and. You know, the only limitation for Barbara and me is that she does not like to eat meals. She doesn't like breakfast served in bed unless she knows she doesn't have to do anything either to prepare or to present or to clean up.
Yes, okay. Well,
so
she has her boundaries.
Yeah, those are the three steps. Prepare, present, and clean.
Otherwise, everything's fine.
Everything's fine.
If you think about it, I mean, the idea of luxuriating in bed and then saying, okay, now I got to get up and wash the dishes.
That's your point. Yeah.
Kind of culture clash.
Yes. Well, but I think, but if we go back to aphrodisiac meals and sharing them, I really think that eating with your hands allows you to perceive the essence of your food before you consume it. So here's a scene, a possible scene. Peel a shrimp, comment on its color, the form, the delicate aroma, and then crunch when you bite into it.
Hmm.
And do this while you're facing your lover, or you could do it with a strawberry or even with a fig.
Hmm.
And what that does is that helps the couple slow down and do sensate focus. Really focus in on the taste and the sensations, which can carry over into lovemaking quite well. The act of eating really is a multisensory experience, and when it's combined with the right ingredients and intentions, food becomes positively sexual.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got virtually all the senses intensely involved at the same time. So,
yes.
We actually created and offered our website a game called Romantic Sensations.
Oh, yeah, talk about that, Michael.
It's all about paying attention to your senses in a romantic way. And so it's everything from how things feel to you, how aromas, sounds, sights. It runs the gamut of the sensory experience. And what the game does is get you to do exactly what you're talking about, is slow down, pay attention, exclude the distractions, and concentrate on each other and on how you experience each other, which is through your senses. So, yeah, there's and food can be a very big part of that experience.
I would like to. I have never played Romantic Sensations. I think it might be good for me to get that and maybe even suggest it to some of my clients, because I can't tell you how many couples need to slow down.
Well, I will through the magic of postal delivery, I will get a copy to you post haste.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Because I do like to try things before I recommend them to my clients. And
well,
of course,
what we did with Romantic Sensations was, because it's really a card game, but to give people the right idea, we've included bath gel and massage lotion.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So this gives you a chance to, what is it, rub-a-dub-dub? We wanted to make it appealing and make it clear this is about using the senses and being physical in using the senses. So I will send that to you.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
That would be great. I have either told a number of my clients to go to Time for Two and buy an enchanting evening, or I have loaned them a copy. And with every single couple, I've heard positive things back.
That's wonderful. It's very rewarding for us to hear that, and not just for cash flow. It's just a nice feeling to know that people have experienced something that they've really enjoyed, that we had a role in creating and offering them.
Of course, you're making a difference. Think what a difference Barbara made in your life as a couple when she created the game some 30-odd years ago. And so much did it impact you that you left your job as an attorney, right?
Uh-huh. We've been doing this. We've been involved with Time for Two since the early 80s. And, it's a completely different direction than where Barbara and I thought our lives were going to be. We both had a lot of business experience, but this was a change. And we got to do a number of the creative business things that people do. You know, we've done our marketing and our public relations and our packaging and design and writing. It's all been a part of this direction that neither of us even remotely considered when we first got married.
Objection. The witness is turning on the judge. Hover rule.
I, of course, before our interview last February and before we flew to Hawaii, Brian and I played an enchanting evening, and we know each other well, but we learned some new things. I can't recall at the moment what they were, but...
My God, I never knew you had one of those. I didn't either until just now.
I'd like to get to know you.
I remember giving one of my couples who were staunch Catholics, and they had never made love outside of their bedroom, and they had a 9-year-old daughter. So they decided to play the game Enchanting Evening in front of their fireplace in the living room, and the daughter was asleep, and apparently she slept well. And so for the first time ever, after playing the game, they were so turned on that they made love in front of the fireplace on a nice, furry throw rug.
I love it. I love it, and they must have loved it.
They did. It really expanded, because they had come to me because their sex life was getting a little stale. So this playing one of your games is really a way to jumpstart a sexual relationship by putting more romance in the equation and more knowledge. And, of course, the more we know about our partners. And when partners have been together a long time, they think they know it all, but maybe they don't.
Well, your relationship changes. Just like we all change as individuals, the relationship changes. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, the couple that got married in their early 20s is different than a couple that had young children and then older children and then children that had left the house and now we're in a different relationship. One of the things that when we talked about our article with Grand Magazine, which is aimed actually at grandparents,
yes.
The whole notion of, okay, now what do you do? You know, if you've retired or if you're working less than you did before, if the kid, you're not taking care of the kids on a daily basis, so you have a different relationship. If you throw yourself into those differences, that relationship can continue to grow and be very exciting.
And couples, some couples find when they retire and they've looked forward to it, and then they're shocked to discover that too much togetherness actually drives them further apart.
Right.
And AARP did a survey that found that 78% of couples did enjoy at least as much sex as they did before retirement. Of course, some of these people weren't having too much sex. But anyway, this was interesting. 12% say they're even more romantic, according to this survey that was done in 2008. So I think older couples that are wanting to continue to be romantic and sexual, they need to remember where it started. They can rekindle romance by acting like strangers, as we've already talked about.
Right.
Playing your game. And they can also do it by making allowances. You know, even if you're fit and in good shape, bodies are different now when you're older. And so you can embrace those differences and celebrate what improves with age.
Well, one of the nice things about a successful long-term relationship
mm-hmm.
is you get past the need for performance. You can ask for what you want. You can enthusiastically fulfill your partner's wishes and desires. A lot of the stuff that went on in dating and early relationships has kind of had the edges rounded off. And rather than thinking of these long-term relationships as boring and predictable, you can think of them as wonderful opportunities to explore and play in a way that would be self-conscious and limited when you were first starting out together.
Yeah, and you also, in addition to having an easier time talking together, you know each other's bodies really well. You may have perfected your technique, and you may feel less inhibited than you did in the past. Lots of women become more assertive. They can speak up what they want, what they need. They know it. And men become more romantic. They can last longer. Intercourse may not be the main event anymore, especially if any ED is present. So they can go beyond intercourse and have lots of sensual play that way.
That's really what our games are about, is extending that experience and making the if it's an evening that you're playing a game. Make the whole evening this romantic experience in all the ways that you're talking about, not necessarily just intercourse, but the whole gamut of what you share with your partner.
Michael, once again, you have been a delightful, informative guest, and I do thank you for being on this program. And we'll have you back in a few months.
Okay.
And so thank you. I wanted to tell the audience that a week from today, Michael Castleman, who's a friend of Michael Jonas's, right?
He is. Longtime friend.
Yeah. So he has a wonderful book that we talked about 3 weeks ago. Some, but we're going to talk some more about it. It's about great sex and making, for the man, making it a whole body experience, not just genitally. And of course, he's a wonderful author. You probably met him in San Francisco, right?
We did.
Yeah.
We did.
Well, there's the music, Michael. We'll have to continue.
Remind me the next time I'm on, remind me to tell you what an interesting way in which we met. It was a wonderful story of coincidence and circumstance.
Oh, good. I may want to hear that off the air.
Okay.
Thanks again, Michael.
Diana, thank you.
You're welcome.
Aloha, everybody.
Thank you, kind sir.